Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
I'm a shot in the dark, very short of spark.
Welcome back to The Whaley Show. I am your humble host, the aforementioned Whaley, Andrew in particular. Drew to a few of you, Andy to the family, but to the best of us and the rest of us, just plain old Whaley. Whale with a tail. And some of you have been listening for a while are going, what in the world is going on? The show is not called The Whaley Show, and that is not his introduction. And why is he even doing a show? I thought that show was over. Well, alas, there is news. There is news, and here we go, kids. Episode 310 of the podcast formerly known as The Counterposition. Look, we're going to sort all this out. You know, a funny thing happened on the way to episode 311. All right. So here we go. Here's the thing. A lot has changed. I've been away for a long time. I tried to make a comeback. It didn't really work. A little aside. Okay, if you've never listened before, and first of all, if you're a brand new listener, let me introduce myself. My name is Andrew Whaley. I am the founder of a consulting apostolate called Calyx. We help people use hospitality, you know, beauty, wonder, decraft, all the above, mostly to create community. We leverage hospitality to create community. And basically, we help people build coffee houses for the most part. We design, train, build, and launch coffee houses as places and contexts of relationship that can emerge through conversation and with a discipleship kind of bent. So that's who I am. And for over 20 years, I've been behind some kind of counter for the most part. Coffee houses, wine bars, cafes, etc., mostly coffee houses, and I've been in every aspect of the coffee industry for over 20 years. And because of that, and I've also studied philosophy, theology, been on this kind of walking spiritual search engine, you know, for a long time. I'm stealing that from Father Robert Barron. I like how he described Aquinas's agent intellect, the intellectus agens, is that what it is in Latin? As the searching intellect, you know, a search engine. I'm the walking search engine. And so because of that, I've always been kind of processing these ideas out loud. And so that I end up reading philosophy, theology, and then processing it out loud to people who don't share my take on things at all, for the most part. And that has just kind of formed over time my mode of engagement with reality. Drink. Yes, there is a drinking game associated with this podcast, and that is one thing that has not changed. In a future episode, we will go over all the new and improved rules of the drinking game. But if I use the phrase mode of engagement, that doesn't count because I'm talking about it. You have to drink. That's not changing. Another thing that doesn't change is I have almost no notes for this show. And I know a lot of you have been waiting to hear this for a while. Hold on. Here it comes. Rock me, Honduras. I have a beautiful manual brew of a Honduran coffee roasted by the lovely and talented Robbie Britt at Dynamite Coffee in beautiful downtown Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Hint, that's where I am these days. Anyway, so I started this podcast called The Counterposition on Breadbox Media, which is still on Breadbox Media. And it was kind of a did 309 episodes. The 309th episode was after a long hiatus. I tried to do a comeback and it didn't happen. And so what I'm doing is, we talked about, should we rebrand? We're going to rebrand the thing. So now, because I'm kind of switching some stuff up, I'm going to talk to you about. But we decided to rebrand, and it was like, okay, should we just start with number one? But everybody's already subscribed to this on iTunes and everything. And you know, here's the thing, is that I've always been the guy that will buy a journal. I got this nice, clean, new journal, a new Moleskine, or a new notebook of some kind, and I'll write in a couple of pages. I'm going to journal now. I'm going to be a journaler. I've always wanted to be a journaler. I'm going to journal. And so I'm going to journal, and I journal for like 3-4 days, and then I forget to journal, and then it's like 3-4 months later, I go, oh, I'm going to journal. Oh, I got that journal. And then I look at it, but it's soiled. I think so much has changed. I can't just pick up. I need a new journal. So I put off getting a new journal until some significant moment, like my birthday, my feast day, New Year's, a move, first day in the new house, something like that. Clean slate. I love the clean slate. I never want to go back to those journals. I have all these journals with, like, you know, the first, anywhere from the first few pages to the first third of them written in, and nothing else. But we decided not. So this was kind of like, this was my attempt to go back to and just start right off where I left off with a new context, but in the same journal, same podcast, different name, episode 310, of the podcast formerly known as The Counterposition. It's like Prince, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince. Some of you way too young to remember that, but hold on, here comes another coffee slurp. It's something I'm known for, is this coffee slurp in the microphone. And if you're just now starting to listen, little housekeeping before I kind of tell you what's been going on with me. There is the count. This is where it gets really confusing, right? So what I did was, I used to do a daily show. So all of my content kind of ended up on one podcast, but now this is a weekly show now. And so, all of that stuff that had to do with hospitality and coffee and discipleship theory and all of that stuff, that's going over onto a new Calyx podcast, which may or may not be called The Counterposition, but it's going to be about being behind the counter and about the life of hospitality, as in the life of apostolic hospitality in particular. And that's kind of all that stuff. That, so if you like that part of the old show, you're going to want to subscribe to that new podcast too, because that content is kind of going over there. This is going to be more, less about hospitality, less about discipleship theory and all that stuff. It's going to be much more facing outward. So this is more, ironically, more what I would say if I were in the counter position. I would be talking less about how to get people to come in and what to say to them behind the counter, which is what that new show is going to be about. This is what I would actually talk about, you know. So it's like the same show has been broken into two weekly shows, and the two aspects you get are in two different podcasts. So I'll be telling, once we start doing the podcast for Calyx, that'll be housed over on the new Calyx website that's being built. And we will, do that. Another format change is because we're not doing, I may end up doing breaks, and we may do some live reads, and we may do some ads and stuff, but there's not set breaks like there used to be. I used to have like these 11 minute, 47 second breaks or whatever, you know, and I used to like, okay, we're coming to the break, and I'd be trying to get there. The show needs to be around 30 minutes to an hour. That's about where we're going to land at. There are no set breaks. So I just kind of get to go and go and go. So I'm like the Energizer Bunny. So that's what's going on. The new show is The Whaley Show, because I am Whaley. it is true, because I'm Andrew Whaley. I joked about it in the beginning. My family calls me Andy. I made the big switch to Andrew. A lot of you know me as Andrew. A few of you, Doug, sometimes Anita, know me as Drew. There's a few, select few, who have kind of given me the Drew. I like Drew. I'd go with Drew. Drew Whaley. I like that. That's kind of a nickname. It has to be given. It has to emerge. It has to emerge naturally. So I'm Drew Whaley, and I am a podcaster. So we decided to just go with, So we were talking about a rebrand. I had this real high concept rebrand I wanted to do. And Leo Brown from Breadbox Media calls me up one day. This is like close to a year ago. He was like, I mean, it was a long time ago. It was six months ago, I think. And he says, look, I don't think many people can pull this off, but I think you can. I think you should just do the Andrew Whaley Show. I think that you're a big enough personality. You can just do this. And I'm like, well, okay. I'm like, if we're going to do that, look, whenever I get going and I'm kind of holding forth and doing my thing, all of my friends just laugh and just go, oh, here's Whaley. Whaley's going off again. Whaley. So I put on Facebook that I was doing the new recording the new show. So I'm getting some questions and I'm going to go to at the end of the show, some questions and some suggestions and stuff. I should probably mute that, so you're not hearing the dings as they happen. All right. So back to my minimal bullet notes here. All right. So what happened? I'm not even going to go into why I decided to switch to a weekly show. I had done 308 shows at that point, you know, roughly 2-3-4 a week at a time. And for a while there, I was doing 5 a week and I was just tired. I was at a place in my life when I needed a change. I needed something going. So when we went to the weekly format, I meant for it to be a couple of weeks of just play some reruns and just let me take some time off and kind of reboot. And I was thinking about this rebrand. Then I came back and I did the big episode. If you go back one episode from this, there's an old episode of 309. I'm back. And I did one show and I was just going through some stuff and I thought I was ready to come back and I wasn't ready to come back. So, but I am back doing my, what do I do? Okay. Oh, someone wrote this. I don't know if Leo, did you write this? Is on the iTunes page that observational humorous Andrew Whaley. I like to might think of myself as more of a monologist, you know, I do monologue. I'm a monologist. I don't, not just humor. I'm not just observational humor. It makes me sound like I'm Seinfeld or something, you know. What's with dry cleaners? If it's dry, how does it even clean? I mean, that's not what I do at all. that was the worst Seinfeld imitation in the entire world. All right, so what's going on, man? Okay, things are about to get serious. Told you I'm relaunching the show because I'm also kind of like Calyx has been kind of relaunch to what caused all this relaunching. I am, as I hinted before, I am no longer in Denver, Colorado. What happened? All right. Here's the first big segment of the show after the, for the love of God, where have I been? It comes down to, my mom had a stroke, a big fat one. That's a technical term, by the way, big fat stroke. It's a BFS. No, she had a massive hemorrhagic stroke. There's two kinds of strokes. There's ischemic strokes. Well, I guess there's two main kinds of strokes. There's ischemic strokes and there's hemorrhagic strokes. And mom had a hemorrhagic stroke, which I guess one is like you have a blood clot and it travels through and it gets lodged in your brain. And then that causes some kind of something to bleed or whatever. Boom. This was like something ruptured in my mom's brain and it was back low in the back and deep, like right on her brainstem, and the swelling went up onto her cerebellum, and it was a huge bleeding in the worst place. It was right. Cause I mean, the brainstem is kind of the oldest part of the brain. It's like, it's the part of the brain that we share with, like reptiles and stuff. I mean, this is like an old part of the brain. And, all the main survival functions and stuff like that. This mic arm is just, I'm going to have to re-put this someplace else. I'm having to bend over too hard to be where I need to be. I'm going to turn slowly. I turn inch by inch. What's that from? Isn't that an old Laurel and Hardy thing? All right, let's try this. There you go. My back won't be hurting by the end of their show then. So my mom has this hemorrhagic stroke. And so I'm literally like, I just opened a new shop for shout. I got so many shout outs for people in Denver at some point. Later in the show, I'm just going to do a ton of rocket fire shout outs. But I built Stargazer Fine Chocolates and Coffee for the lovely and talented Karen D'Onofrio and her family. Stargazer, best chocolate and coffee in all of Denver, Colorado. There you go. That was for you, Karen. Say hi to your dad for me. And so we built this beautiful shop for them. If you're in Denver, if you're listening, go to Stargazer Fine Chocolates and Coffee. Tell them I said hi. So I built this shop and we've been open, I don't know, like a few weeks. Not 3 weeks, I think. And I finally had like my first real morning off. It was kind of snowing and the shop was super slow and we had double coverage. And I think Sarah Stacy, shout out to Sarah Stacy. I think Sarah Stacy was behind the bar. And so I was like, okay. Or no, it was Marie O'Brien. Marie O'Brien was behind the bar. Shout out to Marie O'Brien. And so I'm just sitting in my office at the house that I'd lived in Denver for there for like 5.5 years. And I'm hanging out and I'm like, man, I got office morning. I got a lot of paperwork to do. I got a lot of stuff to do. All this to do's that fell, you know, off the ground, you know? And so, there's new sounds here. I'm in a new recording place. I'm not in a bunker, below a center of the new evangelization and deep in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD anymore. I am in not really an ivory tower, more of an ecru tower. The walls are kind of ecru. I'm in an upstairs office that I rent now. So I'm sitting here in my office, in my old office, in the house, my home office, and the phone rings, and it's my little cousin, Star. Shout out Star if you're listening. I don't know if Star actually listens to my show. And she was like, hey, how you doing? Okay. Hey, are you good? Are you good? Are you safe? Are you someplace safe? Are you okay? And I'm like, what is going on? And she's like, are you sitting down? You should sit down. Are you driving? You're not driving. Are you driving? I'm like, just what is going on? Right. And she's like, okay, so, your mom's in the hospital and it looks like she probably had a stroke. So, which turned into a whirlwind of me, you know, I managed to pack and be on ready for a flight at DIA. And I think like 2 hours and 15 minutes when I got here, I realized that I had packed like 4 or 5 pairs of pants and like 2 shirts. I grabbed whatever was clean and laying there nearby, threw it all into, I thought I was going for 2 days. I was gone for like 3 weeks. I did laundry like every other day. So to put it briefly and bluntly, my mom damn near died. I can say damn, by the way. I can cuss on this show now because I always said damn on the show. But I also on iTunes, I looked up iTunes to see what episode we were on, and I have an explicit parental advisory tag on the podcast. I let the occasional, I didn't drop any F-bombs or anything. But you know what? If Luke and Gomer over on the Catching Foxes podcast can get away with being sometimes explicit, I think I can. We'll see. I think that cuss words are not bad words. They're strong words. And when they're overused, they stop meaning anything. They stop carrying their effect, right? That's Dr. Richard Ferrier, my friend, my old professor, used to say that. I use them far too much and they've lost their effect. So try not to drag that into the show. So I come back to Missouri, where I'm from, not to the exact part. Great. Someone's mowing grass outside. I'm in the middle of a downtown area. There's nothing but concrete all over. And somehow someone is mowing grass. So if you hear a lawnmower, you'll hear a hum in the background. It is a lawnmower. So I come back here and I go see my mom. And I mean, oh my gosh, man. My mom has like 15,000 tubes out her. She had, you know, a ventilator and she's on, it's breathing for her. There's feeding tubes. There's all this stuff going on. I mean, it was, all these people are looking at me like, are you okay? I'm like, it was just, I've never been through anything like this. You know, this is insane, right? I just opened this new shop with these people, right? I mean, and I'm just doing my thing, right? I left the Augustine Institute. It was a couple months later, we've got the shop open and we're just in full flow. I'm just working my tail off trying to get this shop rocking. All of a sudden, I'm standing back in my home state in St. Francis Medical Center in the surgical ICU looking at my mother, who I hadn't seen in a couple of years. I mean, it's like, there's mom, full of tubes, in a coma. That'll wake you up. And so mom, long story short, was in a, there's no way to make this a short story. So mom is in this a medically induced coma, basically. I mean, she's so heavily sedated because they figured out that's the best thing. When someone has a really bad stroke and they go down like that, you just sedate the crap out of them and keep them where their body has nothing to do but heal. So they've got her just knocked out, but they're fighting her blood pressure like crazy. Her blood pressure's spiking. She's having minor seizures and stuff and everything. I'm just like, I tell you what, there's just there's a new level of the spiritual life that I pray that if you don't know what I'm talking about, I pray you never do know about. A lot of you parents know about this. A lot of you people have been through things. I know a lot of people reach out to me and shared stories. But when you're sitting next to someone you love, like your mother, in a corner, because you can't get close to her, because if you bump something or she hears even the sound of you rustling pages or something or praying, that it'll like cause her blood. The stimulation causes her blood pressure to spike, you know. And so you're sitting there silently praying a rosary and feeling deep, deep gratitude for the nurses that are coming in and, you know, carefully measuring your mom's urine. I mean, you're just like, I never would have thought that I would feel deep gratitude for someone measuring Sherry's Whaley's urine, you know, but you do, because you're like, they're taking care of mom. They're like being so careful what's going in and what's coming out. They're taking care of her, you know, and you just feel completely helpless. And so it just didn't look good. So they pulled, so I think it was on Christmas Day. They pulled me aside and they brought this Russian neuroscientist. I can't remember his name. It was there. And he says, has anyone given you like numbers or anything? And I'm like, no, I've been asking and no one will tell me what's going on. He's like, okay, here's the deal. He pulls his phone out. He's got an app for that. You know, he's got an app for my mom, for the chances that my mom will live. There's an app for that, evidently. And so he's like, okay, so here's when we plug in your mom's, the location of the bleed and this and this, and we don't know this because she's not awake, so we'll give her a medium score on that. And da 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 da. And he goes down the line, he goes, okay, so we're looking at 74% mortality rate. I'm like, okay, so 3-1. Okay. And he's like, well, that's not factoring in the size of the bleed. If I factor in the size of your mom's bleed, and he changes it, plugs it into the app, turns the phone around, shows it to me, 97% mortality rate. So I remember leaving the hospital that day, and I'd been to mass that morning. I'd been going to daily mass in the hospital, but there's like three people there. And, you know, it's like, just like any other mass. And I was driving around trying to find something to eat. And I'm like, what the hell? Why is everything closed? It's like, why? I just needed something to, oh yeah, it's Christmas. I'd completely forgotten about Christmas, you know? So the next day on the 26th, on the Feast of St. Stephen, they pulled mom out of sedation, cause I guess she'd been under a certain amount of days and you had to pull her out and check her, you know, and see how she's, what's going on, you know? And, they pull her out and there's just reflexes, nothing but reflexes, you know, hold on. I'm not going to submit you to this coffee. He's like, and so, that was a utilitarian coffee slurp, not an entertainment coffee slurp. And, so they pull her off out and they just tell me, hey, you know, you're less than 1%. She's even going to wake up at this point. So just, there's no one home. You need to go talk to palliative care. So I go talk to palliative care, and for a Catholic hospital, I was a little thrown off by how quick people were, kind of how encouraging people were about how quick we should take this person off all these tubes and this life support and all this. I'm like, well, let's give her a break. I'm going to see what happens, you know? And, but I guess everyone besides me understood how unlikely it was for her to survive this. It was completely just out of the, it was just not even remotely an option. I mean, it's just like less than 1%, like deep. Should we even come out of this? And then, you know, there's more questions, right? So, you know, I did not anticipate the road noise when I picked this office and to as one of the things I'm doing in this office is recording. There's a lot of road. So let me know if you're hearing all this road noise. I'll check it whenever I listen to the episode. So I go home. So they're like less than 1%, you know? And then even then we don't know how much damage has been. There's so much swelling. I mean, you can watch the intracranial pressure. I mean, I was coming in every day checking this bag that was pulling the fluid, because they drilled a hole in my mom's head and put a tube in to take the liquid off the vent. The ventricles, which is like a hole in the middle of your brain, was filling with fluid, and they had to like get the fluid off because they couldn't go in and get the actual, you know, hemorrhage, because that hemorrhage was in right on our brainstem where all the, you know, respiration and heart rate and all the big stuff is held, right? So they can't go in there and start digging around in that brain. That's really important brain. So they went through the side in a place that wasn't as important to get a tube in. So I'm like watching this bag, looking at like what color the fluid is, because the darker the red gets, the more she's breaking down the clot, you know, she's breaking down that hemorrhage. And so I'm just like, I'm like, okay, so this is so I meet with them. So I go home and go to sleep, and I get up on the 27th. And my job that day, so I'm here's where I'm at, and I'm not exaggerating this at all. This is not Whaley kind of tuning up a story. I mean, I was sitting on the edge of my bed. I'd taken a shower, and I'd put the right sock on. And I mean, and for days, my rhythm was go in, talk to the nurses, sit there with mom, pray a little bit, realize this wasn't going to be cool. Walk down the hall. I had the halls, like all the labyrinthian stuff, like memorized in the hall, like how to get there. I could get there with my eyes closed. And I go in the chapel, go into this little adoration chapel. And there'd be all these people there just saying, you know, 2-3 people doing their quiet time. They got, you know, their Matthew Kelly book and their rosary, old ladies with their rosary. And there's kind of quiet time, a little tiny adoration chapel. There's Jesus. Hi, how's it going? Good. Hey, yeah, sorry. I sit down. I just start bawling my head off. Everyone, people start coming, like rubbing my shoulders. Are you okay? I mean, I guess you got to get used to that if you're going to an adoration chapel in a hospital. But I would like to publicly apologize to all the people whose holy hours I ruined over the course of my mom's stroke. So I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, like praying for the strength to not just break down crying and to be able to get the second sock on. Cause if I put the second sock on, the pants go on. And if the pants go on, then the shirt goes on. And if the shirt and the pants go on, then I have to put my shoes on. And then I have to get up and go do my to-do list. My to-do list was, call my friend Tim Furlan, read the USCCB document on end of life and feeding tubes and all that stuff to kind of get my conscience clear. Call Tim Furlan, who I went to college with, who's a fellow in bioethics at the Harvard Medical School. You know, ask him his take on this stuff. And then it was like, okay, check into the cremation pricing that my aunt got. Check into the fact that we can inter my mom's ashes in her brother's grave next to her mom and dad without having to purchase a new plot. Figure out if my mom has any life insurance. I mean, this is my to-do list for the day. Right. Design mom's death. Do a little research. Design mom's death. Arrange what's going to go on. And the phone rang. And it was the only number that could ring my phone because it was on Do Not Disturb. And the phone rang. I knew exactly who it was. It was surgical ICU. So I pick it up. And it was they said, is this Andrew Whaley? Yeah, the doctor would like to speak of you. Can you hold the line? I'm like, yeah. So the doctor comes on, and I'm totally expecting that his slightly accented voice to be like, Andrew, I'm so sorry. And I was like, okay, well, she's gone. Mom died. That's what's happening. The minute I saw the phone ring, mom died. I'm like, well, thanks, mom. I mean, it's a severe mercy at least, but now I don't have to be the one who faced all these decisions about how you were going to die. I don't have to be the one that killed my mom, you know? And then the doctor comes on. He says, Andrew, do you remember that 1% we talked about?
So yeah, he says, you got it. She's opened her eyes and she's taking simple commands. I thought the night before I'd gone to her bedside and I kind of broke protocol and just talked to her, even though that you're not supposed to, because of this, it causes the blood pressure to go up. And I said, Mom, they're asking me to make some really hard decisions. So the next time they pull you off sedation to check you, if you're there, you need to do something. I don't know if you can hear me, but if you can hear me, you need to do something. So they pulled her out of sedation. Sure enough, she opened her eyes and started taking simple commands. So I had been dreaming about nightmares, about calls from, you know, cause you just, when you're sleeping on alert like that, you're just expecting a call. So I was dreaming about calls from the ICU. So I got off the phone and I started putting my clothes on and I got, you know, I was kind of hurrying. And as I got towards the kitchen, I started to go into the kitchen to make a cup of coffee. And then I went, oh no, I can't make a cup of coffee because that actually happened. My mom's alive. I have to go. I have my, my yeah. And then I went and I got in a car and I got down to the corner and I started to go across the highway to go get a cup of coffee. And I was like, oh wait, no, you have to turn right. You have to keep going because your mom's alive. That really happened. That wasn't a dream. You know, I drove over to Cape. I was staying with my dad and I got there and there's the S word, coffee house, which will it's like Candyman. If you say the name too much, it just might show up. So the S word is on the corner. And then I was like, you know, I was just gonna get a cup, just get some caffeine, you know, that's how desperate I was. And I was like, oh no, wait a minute. I can't do that. I have to go. My mom's alive. I mean, I kept forgetting cause it seemed so surreal. Right. So I get in, there's mom, you know, and she's, looking around, she can't see anything because they don't have her glasses on. I don't even know where her glasses are at the moment. My mom's near blind. And so over time, I mean, we started talking to her through blinking and, you know, but we had to kind of leave her alone. It just, yeah, there was family drama and weirdness. And I was so stressed out, but long story short, we got her moved upstairs. The neuro, I mean, we just rolled like, I mean, I've had four or five doctors use the word miracle. When the guy that put her G tube in her feeding tube in her belly she had for a while, he saw the CAT scan and he objected on ethical grounds because like you're just extending the inevitable. Why are we putting a feeding tube in this person? And he said, well, go talk to her. He says, this person's awake. The person with this CAT scan is awake. Yeah, well, I'll put a feeding tube in her. Yeah, no problem. She's clearly got to do something else going on here. It's like, I mean, I've had four or five doctors refer to my mom as a miracle. And if it was not a miracle, if you don't believe in miracles and you believe statistics, then I will tell you where this is. I have rolled seven sevens in a row, basically, because we've got her in, out of ICU, in an inpatient therapy. They were going to send her out and send her to a nursing home. I found a stroke-centric inpatient therapy in St. Louis, got her moved, went through a second inpatient rehabilitation, managed to at the last minute get everything back online in a way that we needed it for her to come home. I, of course, long story short, picked up and moved and, you know, put everything in storage and came home. And had to walk away from Stargazer Fine Chocolates that I just opened with them. Had to walk away from everything and in Denver and come home. And so I came home and got mom and took her home. And I've been her, I still am her primary caregiver. But we've gone through, you know, she walks with assistance. She's getting better and better. We went through in-home therapy. Now we were just about to finish up outpatient therapy. We've jumped through all the hoops and got in-home care and I'm able to get back to work. So mom's at home with the caregiver right now and I rented an office nearby and I'm trying to get back to work on Calyx and this. So there'll be a lot more reflections on the life of what that means for me and what that, you know, I won't pack that all into one show, but because it would be just too heavy. And come on, I'm an observational humorist. I don't want to bring you down with an entire show about my mom's stroke. I mean, that's not very humorous. All right. So that's where I'm at. I live in Jackson, Missouri now. My office is in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, very weirdly across the street roughly from my old shop. that I so tragically lost in 2012, which is, it's a really great beer place now, and I can't bring myself to go in it yet. I still haven't been in. I just can't even walk into a room yet. This is a good time, you know, and I just want to, at the end, I'm going to do some shout outs. So I just want to, in case I forget, I just wanted to thank everyone, especially everyone in Denver that were, I mean, an army of people came out to help me move and get the house cleaned up and get, you know, I got out of the lease, and, I'll do some particular shout outs at the end of the show for all of that. But it was just a Herculean task. So, all right. Let's move on to some of my famous observational humor. I don't know why I think that's so funny. I guess I am an observational humorist. I'm just not only an observational humorist. I'm observational and I'm humorous, but I am not an observational humorist. I'm a prophet and a dresser of wild figs. I'm not a prophet. But that's such a weird biblical reference. All right. Let's go to, the royal wedding. I want to just talk about the royal wedding. Okay. So my first thought was this, when I start, cause I'm sitting around watching TV, you're going to get a lot of mom, you know, I'm just sitting around watching TV, which, okay, before I get into the royal wedding, watching TV with mom, I watch a lot of TV with mom. I didn't really watch that much TV before. I watch a lot of TV because mom had a stroke. And what she could do mostly is watch TV because she always tries to read. She's still kind of seeing double and she can only sleep so much. And she, you know, so she watches a lot of TV, and, evidently there are entire channels that exist for NCIS reruns. And I've gotten very, very, very invested in the lives of the characters of NCIS and NCIS, New Orleans and NCIS Los Angeles and Bones. So basically my mom is like this little Christian lady who wouldn't hurt a fly and who's squeamish about all kinds of stuff, who for some reason wants to watch shows that are revolving around someone finding a dead body. And then they have to like do autopsies and figure out what's going on with this dead body and who killed them. It would involve a lot of shooting and killing other people and stuff. Go figure. She says it's her guilty pleasure, but I think that she, you know, I mean, when 80% of what you watch is not really your guilty pleasure, that's just what you watch, Bob. So, but I, hey, no judgment. I'm down for some NCIS. Another thing that I figured out from watching a lot of TV with my mom, the other thing she watches is Hallmark Movies and Mysteries Channel. And so I have identified a pattern, that two patterns I have identified in the reality of Hallmark. One is, if you are a person in no way related to law enforcement whatsoever, well, here, let's just combine them all into one observation. If you are a person who has a job who has nothing to do with law enforcement whatsoever, and you're kind of a washed up actress who was really hot in the 90s, chances are you're going to find dead bodies and have to help solve the mystery. I mean, it's insane. It's like Uncle Jesse's wife from Full House, DJ from Full House. Who else? There's so many, Jewel, Allison from The Biggest Loser that was almost on that. I mean, I'm trying to think, there was like 20 of them, and they were all women who were kind of hot ingenues, like in the 90s or like kind of famous on some kind of 80s show or something. They all have these, and it's always like the librarian or the person who sells antiques or the baker, or they always do this thing that has nothing to do with solving crime. And that's the one who always solves the crime. So I make coffee for a living, and, or I did for a long time. So if I were a woman and I were hot in the 90s, I would probably find a dead body like every other week. That is the probability of the Hallmark Channel universe. Okay. Going back to the royal wedding. So I've been watching TV with mom, and I start seeing all this like royal wedding stuff. And I'm like, really? And my first instinct was, I mean, didn't we fight a war to not have to care about who's on, who's a monarch in England? Wasn't that kind of the point? I mean, why do we care? And I get it. She's an American princess, the whole nine yards. And we all, it's funny. We really love this, the kind of that fairy tale, you know, that thing, you know? And so there's a few observations I had about this royal wedding. The first was, are we supposed to be past girls being rapt with awe at the idea of being a pretty princess? Isn't that, didn't everybody tell us that that's over? The girls are not that anymore. And that was just something that we forced on people. And that's that, but you know, there's a pretty universal kind of like excitement about the idea of someone getting to be a princess. I don't think that, you know, the same way that I don't think we're post-racial like we were supposed to be after Obama. I don't think we're post-princess. I think we're still firmly in princess. I think that we have a complicated relationship with princess now, but I think we're not post-princess in any way, shape, or form. Another thing I notice is that there's this assumption. There's this assumption that fashion is a means of communication. So when she picks this designer, a Canadian designer, an Australian designer. They all have like where each designer is from that Meghan chooses to wear something is like this. I mean, they're like, I don't know, the commentators on TV are like Straussians when it comes to reading between the lines of like what she puts on herself on any given day. And I'm just like, really? Maybe she just wanted to wear an off-white dress with those heels. Do we really think, I mean, maybe, I guess evidently the woman has a team of people that are working with designers and parsing out each and every little thing and deciding what she's going to wear and what kind of message that's going to send. And that brings me to the next thing. If that's true, the details of the cut of things and the color of garments and the details of these garments and the little tweaks about communication by adjusting protocol here or there and all the little details about the way things go down by tradition around something like this. Isn't that supposed to be all this stuff that we're past? Because that's kind of liturgy, isn't it? Isn't it? Aren't we supposed to be past the ability to take meaning in from the change of color in someone's garment? Isn't that supposed to be something that we can't do anymore? That we're not supposed to think like that? The little details of what is on a table or not on a table, or how someone handles something, or who is with someone and which direction they're facing or something like that. Isn't that supposed to be something that we're past now, that we can't, where we modern people are unable to be able to understand that kind of engagement with the divine or with tradition in a way that could be meaningful and communicative of any kind of principles or understanding? And yet, it's like, this is the same observation that I made about every time I go to a rock show. It's like they go through the same thing at the end. It's this little liturgy where it's like they play their last song. They thank everyone. They bow. They leave. We all clap. We think, oh, if we clap enough, will they come back out? We create these liturgies where we do the same thing over and over again. And we notice changes in the expectations in the way that things were done. It's funny, but and this just showed up in a weird place with this whole royal wedding thing, you know? And then finally, I want to talk about, Bishop Curry's sermon. So, I was just taken by the man's style. I love preaching. And when I became a Catholic again, the one thing that I miss most was preaching. good preaching. And I don't mean substance or just a lot of Bible verses or just someone, but not, and not just as simple as someone getting worked up or whatever. Just there's a certain art to communicating information, but communicating it in a way that gets down to the core of someone and then gets them moved to where they want to act on that and identify themselves with the insights in that and move. You're moved in your will through your intellect as well. There's something about great preaching that does that. And I have bitched about this to no end on the show, and I will bitch about it now. The state of Catholic homiletics is deplorable. And they really, 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 really need to learn how to preach. I was spoiled in Denver because I went to Our Lady of Lourdes Father Brian Larkin is a great preacher. And I used to go to Holy Protection of the Mother of God some, and Frollo, Father Michael Lachlan, is a great preacher as well. But I was really moved by Bishop Curry's, his mode of engagement, his mode of preaching, his way of the cadence of his voice and the way that he would use examples and stuff. But then, you know, so then my friend Noelle Maring just wrote an article about this. And she wanted to know what I thought about it, so I told her what I thought about it. And it just got me thinking more deeply. And one of the ideas that I threw out to her was that it was like, it was kind of like, it was everything he said was true. Now, some people freaked out because, like, don't you know he's a liberal? He supported gay marriage. I'm like, okay, I don't care. I don't know who the man is. And maybe he's wrong about what species goes underneath the genus of love. But everything he said about love was true. It was true. It was a true sermon. It was orthodox. And even, you know, he talked about Teilhard de Chardin. I love Chardin. Desjardins. I think Desjardins brilliant and interesting. And I know a lot of really good, serious, conservative, intellectual Roman Catholics who secretly love Desjardins. I think we need to get one of Charles de Koenig defended Chardins. Anyway, that's a sidebar. But then I got to thinking about it. And here's the thing is that, yes, he said redemption. Yes, he said sacrifice. Yes, he talked about that. But the power of these Christian buzzwords to stand up against the steamroller that is a lifetime of presuppositions about what love means, it just kind of becomes like a spiritual Mad Libs where, you know, every time he said love, it's this blank and you can insert your definition of love into that. And if somewhere along the line, there is a contradiction between your concept of love and what he said in these buzzwords over here, it just rolls right over the top of it. You know, but I thought that, you know, look, you got a global audience. So anyway, my friend Noelle Maring wrote an incredible article. It's on National Catholic Register right now, I think. I'm not sure how we're doing show notes right now. I haven't been back in a while. So I think there's going to be an actual page I can send you to for this show, and each episode will be on there and there'll be some notes. I'm not sure how we're doing that. If there is show notes, I'll try to put a link in the show notes. If you just Google, NCR and Noelle Maring, or just go to NCR's website, and it's probably on the front page. It just got a pretty great article. And she contrasted it with, the Bishop Barron's talk at Google. And I think that there's really good insights as why Barron would have been so much better at this and why Barron's method was the way to go about it. Anyway, so that's worth looking at. Enough about the royal wedding. I mean, congratulations. I mean, look, there is one. I think this is interesting as a wedding. I'm interested in these people as human beings. I mean, here's this little kid who's got the spotlight of the world on him right as his mom gets killed in a car wreck being chased by paparazzi. And I was 11. I don't, you know, when they got married, I remember Princess Diana dying when I was a kid, you know, I mean, I was in high school or something, you know, I was in junior high, I think. But I decided I don't have any really attachment to Princess Diana, but I mean, here's this guy and his mom was famous and she got killed like while the world was watching. And now they've been watching him, and then he kind of acted out and did a bunch of partying and all that stuff. And it seems like he's got himself together. Both of them seem to be very other centric. I'm not going to defend everything that they believe or their positions on any kind of culture war issues or whatever, but they seem to be the kind of people that care about others and want to see and want to live their life outward focused for the sake of. And you know what? The fact that two people find each other in this world and in any way make a family and be happy is a miracle. You know, G.K. Chesterton said that there's nothing, I'm paraphrasing, there's nothing so incredible in this world as an ordinary man and his ordinary wife and their ordinary children. And so, yeah, I mean, congratulations to him. I'm stoked on the whole story just as persons, but it was just interesting. All right, so moving on. I'm rusty at this, by the way. I'm just going to be honest with you. I did a test run just to kind of do a few little mic check things, and it sounded completely off, and I like had my recorder on the wrong input. So I'm rusty at this. My flow probably isn't what it used to be. So I appreciate you hanging in here for this episode. All right. One last thing, and then we're going to get a little, I got something kind of a little spiritual I want to talk about. So in the last week, one of the daily readings was, the reading from John, I think it's John 1:17. John 17, where Christ is praying to the Father, and he talks about how that they prays for the apostles and for the Christians, and he says that they may be one as you and I are one, and they may be one with me, and they may be one together as you and I are one. So basically, I can't remember. I'm not going to look it up. I looked it up a while ago. It's on a screen here somewhere. But basically, he prays that for unity that with each other in the way that the Father and the Son have this relationship, right? Well, at the same time as I heard this, I was just kind of thinking about that, you know, and I think it's Gaudium et Spes. I have to look it up. I think it's Gaudium et Spes. One of the Vatican II documents says that this opened up great vistas of possibility for humanity. Basically, it was the next stage in the drawing in of man into the internal life of the Trinity that is grace, you know, the uncreated grace, this deification, this divinization of mankind, where we're brought up in becoming partaker of the divine nature. Because remember, the divine nature is community, right? I've quoted this a million times, and I can't remember who said this. But I stole it from someone. And I gave him credit the first time I said it on the air. But alone never existed. Alone is a lie. There's never been alone. Alone has never, there is no alone. There was not God, one, by himself, one person, off in existence at some point. That's a heresy. There's three. The ground of being is community. It's three. It's a trinity. What do they call that in Greek? I think it's the perichoresis. I think it's this dance of mutual self-gift, where there's this constant giving and receiving of love, this reciprocal self-gift that is this fire of community that is the ground of all being, right? And we are invited into that in a way that began with the incarnation. It began by God in pure gift making something rather than himself. The answer to the question that Heidegger asked, why is there something rather than nothing? Gift. Gift is the answer. And so but then this new phase, we're kind of taken up into that in a way that is the more than even the incarnation did. We're brought into this through this prayer where Christ himself is asking for this, right? Well, at the same time, I'm going to go a weird direction with this. I just started watching Troy on Netflix, and if you haven't listened to my show before, if I mention something, I'm not recommending it, because there are some of you are very conservative Roman Catholics who don't watch anything that has any kind of nudity or anything in it, and you're going to see a boob, and then you're going to freak out, and then you're going to like say, he recommended something, and I let my kids watch it, and there was a boob, and now we're going to call the bishop or something. No, I'm not recommending anything. Don't go watch Troy. It's super good. Well, it's good up until the point that I want to talk about this later, because they cast the relationship between Achilles and Patroclus as a homoerotic relationship. And I think I got a lot of thoughts about that, but it's pretty, I mean, it's well done there. It's the story of the fall of Troy. It's called Troy, Fall of a City, I think. But anyway, so I'd been working on a poem based on the way that they portrayed, the demand for a sacrifice, and then the death and the sacrifice of Iphigenia in the beginning, when Agamemnon has to kill his daughter to get the waves to behave. And I think it's Artemis is the one that wants this. And so you see Paris initially is kind of like drawn into this through, Aphrodite. And there's these different Greek gods are all contending, and they're trying to get Zeus to enter in, and he won't enter into it. And they're all kind of like, and there's this one point where, you know, they're all kind of like different at times. They're trying to move him. Aphrodite's like kind of just trying to seduce him visually in one scene and all this. And it's like this, all this stuff's going on where you see this image of the, and I got to thinking about this. It's interesting. In their myth, yes, maybe there might've been a first or whatever, but the divine is community in the pagan world. Right. And this is the world that the Christians came into. I mean, this is Aeneas that's going to escape from Troy as it burns, is going to found Rome. Right. I mean, there's references to Aeneas and the twins and all that stuff. The founding of Rome, Romulus and Remus and all that stuff with the founding of Rome. In the New Testament with Paul's ship and everything. We'll get into that later, but this is the world that these were very real. There are temples and sacrifices happening to these people, these demons, these concepts. When the Christians are being killed by people because they won't worship these very things. Right. So this is super relevant to their situation. Right. But it's like, look, think about that. You have two pictures of the divine as community. Now think about that passage from John, if a pagan was saying it. Think about if you heard Artemis pray. And Zeus, I ask that they may be one as we are one. I mean, that would be like a threat. Think about that. I asked that they would have cutthroat, conniving, contention in the same way that we have, you know, that's what would be going on. Right. I mean, it hit home to me the vast difference, you know, and we see that back in the Old Testament with kind of like the difference between the Enuma Elish and chaos being the beginning of everything versus the Hebrew take on the beginning, which is much more ordered, loving creation in the good. But think about this world that the first Christians are emerging into, and they're talking to people about this community, this divinity that is community, that is this constant dance of self-gift and mutual love. And pagans who are used to the contention between their gods hearing this. And it's funny, I think when they were talking to Hebrews, the idea that God could become a man or that God could be many and one was the contention. When they're talking to a pagans, God showing up as a man, yeah, that happens. God being many, well, that happens. The shocking part would be, oh, and there's deep self-giving love between the community and the divine. What are you talking about? This is gods we're talking about. They're the very epitome of contention and strife and all that. You know, anyway, that's a That's what happens when you are bored and watching Netflix while you're thinking about the scripture of the day. It's just more of my observational humor. It's just madcap. I'll get better at this again. I was kind of nervous today. I haven't been nervous doing my show since like episode 4. I was in like episode 3 going, this is awesome. I was built to do this. And this is still pretty easy for me, but at the same time, I would record these things and go, why would anybody listen? Oh, and it also, speaking of who's listening, it turns out that we were looking back on the numbers and everything and figuring it out. And what I thought was, you know, like a couple hundred people, that was who was watching on, listening on Podbean on the actual site. We figured out how to go back and look at, the numbers and see kind of like including iTunes downloads and all this stuff. And my numbers now, as far gone as I've been, my back catalog is doing better than I have ever thought my show did. So evidently there was a lot more of you listening, and I want to apologize for underestimating my audience. I used to always say that, you know, I've talked to the listeners of this show and they both seem to like what I said. It's like there was evidently a lot more of you than I thought. So maybe there's a lot more of you now. Anyway, so what are we going to do with this show? We're going to do more of this, except, you know, hopefully I get better at it. Lots of observation. I like the interface between pop culture and you know, kind of like current events. You know, I always sum it up with like, you know, ranting and musing, ranting and musing is what I do on this show. There's going to be some more interviews. I got a really strong internet connection. I purposely bought like crazy good internet connection and the stuff to get a good mic connected to the computer so I can use ringer.com and interview people far flung all over the place. So watch for that. Watch for the Calyx podcast, which we'll probably call the Counterposition, which is going to make everything very confusing because this is actually the show that used to be the Counterposition. And for all of you contrarians that used to listen to both Over the Counter and the Counterposition, I was talking to Mark not too long ago, and we were talking about firing up Over the Counter again. So that was my other podcast with Mark Gieschek, who teaches Old Testament scripture at the Augustine Institute. I'm going to be recording a lot of podcasts again. I got time. We'll see what happens. All right. Now, before the shout outs, I'm going to go over to Facebook and I will start the shout outs. So the first shout out, look at this royalty. Father Michael Paul O'Loughlin from the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. Good friend, board member of Calyx, if we ever get around to actually physically launching this board. He says, if you could pick one sticker to put on your laptop that would get someone else at the coffee shop to start a conversation with you, which sticker would it be? I don't know, Father, for me or for you? I don't know. For me, I don't know. I've always been against stickers. I mean, let me take it back. I'm against bumper stickers and that whole bumper sticker mentality. I love stickers. I grew up skateboarding, and anybody knows anything about people who skateboard, we love stickers. I don't know. Something, I would put something on your laptop. It's a kind of a play on something that, I don't know, put like God loves gay people or something. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. Someone had a private conversation with the Pope and came away to saying what they thought. He said, well, that'll be next week. That'll all play out by then, I'm sure. I don't know. Let me think about that, Father Michael. Put a Patagonia sticker on there and wear your collar. People will be shocked that a priest cares about the environment. I don't know. My little cousin, Tyler, says about time. Glad you're back. And then makes an inside family joke. Um, Noelle Maring, do you like it when your friend gets notes for her article and then lifts a phrase without attribution? There may have been a couple of thumbprints on Noelle's article from our conversation. Noelle, you are absolutely brilliant. You shouldn't be allowed to be that brilliant and that beautiful at the same time. And you can steal my ideas anytime you want. I'm glad that someone talented is using them instead of a hack like me. And look, Potter Edmund says, hooray. This is Potter Edmund Waldstein. I'm sorry. Cistercian. A regular old plain vanilla Cistercian, not a Trappist. In Heiligenkreuz. It's so hard to say. Holy Cross. A monastery, 1,000-year-old monastery in Austria. He's the digital monk, Potter Edmund. He's very happy that I'm back. All right. That's all the comments. All right. So now shout outs. I'm over an hour. Shout outs. Shout out to all of my friends and listeners who supported me for the first 309 episodes, and especially all of you, constant listeners and supporters like Michael Miley, John Coons, Antoinette Golish, the shiny Disney warrior princess, which congratulations to Antoinette and Blaine. They are getting married, and she found herself a big old hunk of Texas beef, and she's going to marry him right up. The whole Golish family, shout out to the whole Golish family. To Ducky and Perry West and all Sarah Stacy and all you folks in Denver, Colorado. I miss you people deeply. Next time I'm going to talk about Denver, what I miss about Denver, what I'd realize I didn't get, what I got attached to in Denver. And I'm going to do some riffs on what it's like living in a small town again. Shout out to else. Shout out to Leo Brown, Pete Sox at Breadbox Media. Pete's been knocking it out of the park, taking Breadbox Media to the next level as the new managing partner. Could not be prouder. We have Breadbox Media. Go check us out, man. We got Catholic Answers Live. We've got John Michael Talbot, Father Dwight Longnecker. We have all kinds of, I am small potatoes. We got some big guns now. It ain't just Mark Shea anymore. Now we got some other big guns. I am now a very small fish in this pond. A big shout out to everyone who helped me move. So I'm going to forget a ton of people. So I'm just going to say everyone. Andy Nickel was there. Michael Sawyer. Who else? Jacob Heal, my friend from college, was down in Colorado Springs. Came up with one of his boys and helped. Connie Graves. I'm trying to think of who else was there. So many people showed up. Anyway, if you showed up, and it was months ago, it seems like years ago. If you showed up to help me move and clean my house in Denver to get me back here for my mommy, I appreciate it. Big shout out to everybody at San Francis Medical Center for saving my mom's life. Thank you for drilling a hole in my mom's head and sticking her in a coma for a while so she wouldn't die. Big shout out to the Rehab Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for getting my mommy back up on her feet and rolling hard. Shout out to all of my friends and family here in town who, just knocked it out of the park and got my mom's, house remodeled, her bathroom remodeled. Oh, and thank you so much. Massive shout out to everyone. We had a fundraiser in the interim too, and we raised about $6,000. Cause I just up and inherited, a ton of expenses. And, so we, big shout out to everybody who gave to my fundraiser. It's still kind of going, but we're probably going to wrap it up soon. It's out there on WonderWe. And a shout out to, a special shout out to, the Nofrio family and Stargazer Fine Chocolates and Coffee in Denver, Colorado. I just like took off. I was gone for like a month and they just kind of kept paying me. just didn't say a word about it. They just took care of me. And just as I was transitioning, helped take care of me and gave me consulting business and stuff. So here I am, I have a new consulting client down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. and we're building a beautiful, cool shop down there. And I'm working on Calyx as an online media driven kind of apostolate kind of thing. So more about that. Anyway, I think that's all I got today. I forgot so many shout outs. I'm forgetting. Denver, if you're in Denver and all you people, you know who you are. I miss your face so bad. I'm all you people in California, Lo Schneers, my little goddaughter, Ren, the Miley's, the Bancrofts, the Marings, all of you people. I miss your faces so bad. One of these days I'm going to get to travel again. I went from being on an airplane like every weekend to like, I can't go anywhere now. So, all right, enough rambling. I'm assuming we're using the same music, still Perry West of Kooks and Kings from his record A Glass Half Full, but Perry's working on some special new tasty. I got Perry to do my music, and then he showed up with something special and new for the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. But I was first, just for the record. I was the first person to have Perry West's podcast. And now Perry's working on some tasty new jams just for the podcast. So we'll let you know when that's coming. Oh, let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Whaley Show. See you next time, kids.
I'll take your place, marble stone.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.